For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
ESPN 690 and Action Sports Jax presents Brent and Friends with Brent Martineau.
We're going to have to show a little more patience than the year two pom-pom people.
Casey Kurtz.
Yo! Well, what are we doing, bro? Come on!
And Aaron Schachter.
I'm all in favor of these two showing their love and really celebrating their relationship.
This is Brent and Friends with Brent Martineau, Casey Kurtz, and Aaron Schachter on Jacksonville's home for ESPN Radio, ESPN 690.
Oh, Clay Harbor's all excited right now. He's up in the Windy City, probably. Justin Fields played well for two games in a row. Rising star now in the NFL. Don't worry, Clay Harbor. We remember this discussion in Jacksonville after week three as well. And now look. Don't take it for granted, pal.
Enjoy it while got it.
I'm not. But honestly, Fields is looking good, guys. And I feel like Luke Getsy, the Bears offensive coordinator, has finally figured out a good way to use him. They've restructured this offense. Fields is getting the ball out quicker. They're utilizing his running ability, which is causing defenses fits. Played against one of the best defenses in the league, the Dallas Cowboys, one of the best pass rushes, and the offensive line held up. This is supposed to be the worst offensive line in the league, and they held up against the Cowboys. Offensive line's looking better because of this restructuring the offense. Justin Fields looking better, and you already know what just happened yesterday. Chase Claypool, 6'4". 240 pounds, and juice him up a little bit. 4'4", 40, 40-inch vertical, 10'5", broad jump, freak athlete, comes to Chicago, so I'm excited for the Bears. And, you know, the Jags have a little something coming in next year, too, as well.
Yeah.
I'm excited about.
What do you like better, Claypool or Ridley? Like, should the Jags have tried to get Claypool?
I think the Jags should have tried to get Claypool, but I don't want to go against, you know, the Bears here, my two teams, you know, Jags, Bears, and obviously, you know, I'm an Eagles guy, too. I spent some time there in Philly. But I think they both ended up with some good players, right? I think the Bears were probably in a bigger need for Claypool because they after Darnell Mooney, they really had no one, had nobody on their roster. Nobody's going to catch footballs. I mean, and Kill Harry. Can you guys name one wide receiver on the Bears off the top of your head right now, besides Darnell Mooney?
No, but I did believe that Cole Kmet was going to be a bigger contributor this year, and he just hasn't been.
Oh, yeah, I was team Cole Kmet all the way. I was just telling people to draft him to their fantasy teams, and honestly, it's not all his fault because the offense obviously hasn't been producing, but Kmet has left some plays in the field. He's not as good as a route runner as I thought, but he has impressed me with his blocking. He's one of the best at the point blocking tight ends in the league, in my opinion.
Clay Harbor with us here at Brent and Friends on ESPN 690 each and every Wednesday, 4 o'clock. All right, let's talk more about the Ridley deal. I mean, we keep talking about this, Clay, and the more you talk about it, the more you like the deal. I think it's a very smart play by the Jacksonville Jaguars. But from a player standpoint, what could he do? Like, if he was jumping in this week, like, what would he do for the Jaguars offense as it looks?
Too, just a big play guy, you know, out of Alabama. He's well coached. He's had in the three full years he's played, he's had over 3,000 yards. I mean, this guy that's had over 1,300 yards receiving in a season. He's just a big play threat, a guy that can do everything you need to do for a wide receiver. So I think if you could plug him in right now, he's going to greatly help Trevor Lawrence and give him that big time guy that you can go to when the chips are down. He needs somebody you know is going to get open. Obviously, you got Christian Kirk there, but I think he's going to be the number one. And he's going to be the guy to do that for you. So I really like the move, and I like how they structured it. It's low risk, high reward, right? Because you give up the fifth round this year, and the next year, it depends on what happens with him. If you re-sign him and he does well for you, you're okay giving up a two. But if he kind of flops here, you don't resign. You don't have to give up that two. You have to give up that fourth round. So I think it's structured in a good way. Balky, Doug, whoever's working this contract, working the trade, did a good job, and I think it's going to work. The only downside I see is that he's only under contract for one more year. Same thing with Chase Claypool. We get a year and a half of Chase Claypool in Chicago, and then he's a free agent. But I like the move in both regards.
Clay Harbor with us here on ESPN 690. Just your thoughts real quick, and don't lose your pension or anything with any of your comments from the NFL. But, I mean, do players think it was kind of ridiculous that Ridley got a year for the gambling stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the full story of it. I heard he was only betting $1,500, but he's betting on games that he played in. I think you had to come down hard. Yeah. Those are the rules. And the gambling's everywhere. You got all these sponsorships, these everything, these gambling sites are just popping up everywhere. Huge market. And if you don't nip this in the bud, if you don't slam the gavel and give this guy, throw a book at him, then you might be seeing some more. Then after everybody saw what happened with him, they saw what Ridley got, nobody's going to be doing it now. Everybody, they don't want to lose their livelihood. If you're not Calvin Ridley, you might not recover from this. Your whole career's over. But because he is a superstar receiver, he's going to get this opportunity to still play. But I think they did what they had to do to stop this before it gets started, because this stuff's becoming more and more prevalent. It's becoming more and more accessible. And this was something the NFL had to do. They don't want to get involved with this, and they had to send a point, send a message, and I think they did that.
My buddy said this to me yesterday. He's like, I don't understand why guys can't bet on the NFL.
On their own games?
As long as you're not betting to lose, what's the downside? If you're betting for yourself to win, what's the downside?
Maybe just the fact that you've got inside information is an unfair advantage, but what does that matter to the NFL?
It's totally optical, right? It's an optic thing.
I must say, though,
horse racing, the jockeys can bet, and they're on the back of the horse. I'm kidding.
No
I'm not kidding. Yeah, they can. They go to the window right before they go out there.
This whole sport is predicated on betting with horse racing.
But can soccer players bet?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Did you think the year was egregious?
Yes.
Really?
Well, I think in relation to everything, like, I don't know the scope of it, to Clay's point. Like, maybe there's more, but it didn't seem like this, like, betting on our team to lose, betting on – this wasn't Pete Rose. Like, it didn't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like he was out with an injury, he was bored on his couch, and he put a bet down on a game.
Maybe I'm a skeptical person by nature, but I have a hard time believing people who get caught – in big things, it's ever their first time doing whatever it is they get caught for.
And maybe it wasn't his first time at that, but I'm not saying he's in the locker room betting.
Right.
Like, I think he was out. Like, he was out with the injury the time.
You guys don't watch any TV whatsoever. Clay, I don't know about you, but there's a Netflix documentary right now of the Untold series on Tim Donaghy, who's the ref that got caught in that betting scandal that was mixed up with, it sounds like, the mafia. But you watch that documentary, you go, yeah, I kind of understand any sport coming down really hard on gambling within the sport, because it kind of hurts the credibility of the whole thing. But to your point.
He was blowing the whistle.
Yeah, but to your point.
I mean, that's
he
a
was
big
betting
difference.
On a, Ridley's betting on himself at a game. Tim Donaghy's sitting there literally fixing games. Although to this day, he claims he's never fixed a game in his entire life. It's crazy.
Yeah, pretty wild. Hey, sorry, I had to go off topic there for a second, but I just thought it was interesting. My buddy brought that was an interesting perspective to me. And he didn't have a problem.
I'm curious what you thought the suspension should have been. If you were Goodell.
I understand what Clay's saying is this was a message sent to everybody else. We don't want this, right? But here's the problem, and this is what people have a problem with. Deshaun Watson, who everybody thinks is guilty.
Yeah.
Got 11 games, and on top of that, in that stretch, was able to sign a $230 million contract.
And is named the starter today, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
And I think is around the
facility.
The facility.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that's what people have a problem with. You see some egregious things. You see some, you're like, bet on a game or X. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow. I think that's why people have a hard time with the process of this. And again, it didn't feel like a chronic thing. From Ridley, it felt like, I want to throw some money on this game.
Yeah,
we're so accustomed to it now, Clay. Right? I mean, everybody's doing it.
Yeah, everybody's throwing some money. It's just so easy to do now. It's so accessible. You put some cash in an account, and you just bet on the games, bet on your teams. And I definitely see what you're saying. If you're betting on your team to win, but then that's a slippery slope. Okay, like what happens when someone approaches you and says, hey, like I'm going to put $1 million if you just, you win, but you just cover the spread. Now, hey, we weren't losing. We won, but I just made sure to drop this ball so we covered the spread. So I feel like it's a slippery slope, like you said, and you had to send this message. As sad as it is for Calvin Ridley and his career, you had to send the message. And I know I hear the Deshaun Watson people, and I agree. But, I mean, Deshaun Watson, I mean, he didn't get any criminal charges filed, and I know, obviously, Calvin Ridley didn't. So it's interesting how Deshaun got off with only what he did compared to Ridley, because you would think that would be, you know, at least as significant as, you know, the gambling a couple $100 or $1,000 on a game, but, you know, I don't make the rules.
Yeah, I'll take it even a step further, by the way. Gambling is not something where traditionally is not a problem that can develop into addiction. Like, it can very easily develop into an addiction. And so maybe you do start off betting on yourself and your team, and then maybe you lose a few, and then maybe you try to win it back with some more bets and you lose a few more, and then suddenly you're right. Or Clay's example comes to fruition where you're in a position where now you really do have to do something to win some money back here.
Yeah, well, by the way, just from the simple logistics of it, I don't know how you would be able to tell if somebody was betting on something, but not betting against themselves.
Right, you'd have to prove it.
So you just got to wipe it all out. Like, mm-hmm. I understand it, but I also kind of, my buddy had a decent, made me think a little bit. Yeah. Like, all right, if they're betting to win, I think
if you ask me in a vacuum, which is more, like, terrible, like trying to sexually assault somebody or betting on a football game, I'm like, yeah, the sex assault is probably a lot worse.
Yeah, public opinion weighs in on that, right, a little bit. All right, hey, how much are we in trouble in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence? I guess that's the storyline this week, Clay. How concerned are you about him?
You know, it's honestly, for the first time after last game, I did start to feel a little concerned for Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he's obviously regressing, and you hate to see it. And his offensive line's playing well, and his team surrounding, he's just missing throws, and it's something that you see. The thing that got me was the play in the goal line when it just looked so similar to the play against the Texans. And to me, that's a learning curve. Like, you've done it. You made the mistake. You've experienced it. So now you got to improve on it. You got to throw the ball out the end zone. Here's a tweet that I sent out today or yesterday. I said the Jags they're 5-20 with Trevor Lawrence as their quarterback. He has 22 picks and 23 interceptions in his career. The first game of this year, he has 4 touchdowns and 5 picks, with a 57 completion percentage and a 72 rating. I mean, those numbers aren't good. Obviously, you know, there's some things that you can say about it, some drops, some protection, the way the game was going, but he's not looking good. He's looking like he regressed, and, I mean, you got to start seeing some signs of life out here, or you're getting worried that maybe this isn't the generational talent that we thought we had in the ball.
I think a lot of people in the locker room and in the building see the good plays, the overall stuff, like, wow, okay, made that throw, this throw. There's a lot of physical tools there. Physical tools are always going to win the day in almost any sport now, where you're going to be more patient when a guy can make every throw, right, when he can do those kind of things. But I think that play was alarming to so many of us on the outside, like, okay, he's never going to do that Houston thing again, like, that won't happen. Yeah. Oh my gosh, the exact same play. Like, exact same play. And literally, you know, people are on Doug a little bit about it too. Don't put him in that position, but come on. I mean, you can't make the play whether you've played one game, 25 games, 440 games in the NFL. Like, you just can't make that play. And he did it twice in a month, and both games lost probably because of those plays. And that's probably my biggest issue right now with Trevor Lawrence, Clay, is they brought him in here to flip it, to be the reason why they're going to flip it. And I think right now, this season, on a couple of occasions especially, he has been the reason why they're held back from being 4-4 right now, or maybe even something better.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing. The thing with me is, you got to be showing improvement at this point. And situationally, I don't know if he takes everything into account. Like, you hear a couple of, like, some Tom Brady talk, and Joe Burrow even, and they're saying, hey, I know exact down and distance if it's third down, fourth down, the end of the game, and you try to force something in there, obviously it's okay. But it's first and goal for a yard, and you're thrown into a crowd, and it's not crystal clear. You've got to know. You got to know situationally. I don't want to risk anything. If this is an 80% probability, I might sell it just because I know I got a couple more downs to punch this thing in. You got to know those things in this league, in the NFL. And the fact that he's not picking up on that, from what it seems, I'm getting a little worried. I still think he's very talented. I think he can improve. And obviously you got Ridley coming in next year. You got Travis Etienne. You got a run game that's running for 156 yards. You got an offensive line that's giving you time. There's some drops there, but that's if you're getting pressured, if you have no run game, it's more acceptable to me. But when you have those things moving, you got to be able to move the ball and make some plays.
We will never see the goal line roll out to the right play again this year, right? Like, that's been taken out of the playbook.
Probably not.
I don't know. Doug, you never know, man. He might throw it. He might throw it next week.
I mean, you can't. Like, you've got to take that out. Here's the thing, Clay. When he was rolling out to his right, I was watching the play on TV. I'm watching it unfold, and I'm like, there's nothing there. Like, in my head, I was like, all right, throw it away. Well, the next time he's inside the 10 and he's rolling right, I'm just turning the TV off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not watching. Like, that's where we're at. So why? There's a lot of other plays in the playbook. Just get the play out of there. Like, there's no way. Like, Clay, how many times did you do something in your career where you were like, I don't like this route. Nothing good happens on this route. Or nothing good happens when I do X. Maybe it was Chip Kelly asking to play linebacker. I don't know. But, like, that's, like, I don't care who you are. If you call that rollout to the right play near the goal line, Trevor Lawrence's mind is going back to the Houston and Denver game now for the rest of eternity. He better not do that play at the goal line. Nothing good. That's like being out after midnight, man. Nothing good is going to happen.
Well, something good is, you know, considering what, you know, what you're talking about is possible. So that's, I mean, that's what Trevor's thinking. You know, he's still thinking about the possibility of something good happening. But for me, that was always a toss crack, man. You saw out of 10 tries, you would get 5 nice plays, but you're going to have 5 plays that are just blown up on the toss crack. And I don't know, I'm like, man, why do they keep calling this play? Dang, toss crack. Everybody loves a toss crack. But, I mean, yeah, throw that one out, Doug. You got roll left, maybe.
Roll left.
I don't know.
That's fine. Roll left. That's fine. I don't care about that. Like, you can.
Yeah, that one's gone.
One other thing that's – a lot of people have suggested this and brought this up. Should he be running more based on what he did in college, based on what you're seeing out of Justin Fields? Should he be designed moving or using his legs more? Like, go back to the Indy game? I think the Indy game was where he kind of had some designed runs in there. He went 20 for 22 throwing the football. Like, is there something to that where even if it's just 3, 4, 5 times a game, that make sure you keep it and run? I'm not talking about a QB sneak here.
Yeah, no, I think there's something. I mean, give the defense something else to look at. Give them something else to see. But, I mean, Trevor Lawrence isn't Justin Fields. Justin Fields is, you know, 6'3", 230 pounds, and runs a 4.4 flat 40. So I would worry about Trevor Lawrence's build a little bit more and getting injured with these design runs. And his main deal is he's a slinger. He's a gunslinger. He can get the ball out quick. With Justin Fields, you got him trying to do something he's not. I almost fell out of my chair when Luke Getsy, after that little bye week, said, you know, I think we got to get Justin Fields on the move more. I go, wait a second. It took this man six, seven games to figure out we got to get Justin Fields, who runs a 4.4 40, 6'3", 225 pounds, on the move more? Like, a blind man could see that. But Trevor Lawrence, I think, is a different type quarterback. He's supposed to be, you know, a Joe Burrow. He can get out of trouble if he needs to be. But I wouldn't even call him like a Patrick Mahomes as far as mobility. But, I mean, it does give the defense something else to game plan and something else to worry about, if you're throwing a zone read here, a zone read there. So I think there's definitely something you can do that, but I wouldn't have an elaborate scheme based off a run game with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and I'm not going crazy here. I'm not saying Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields and others, but I'll give you an example. One, Daniel Jones. Those were safe, designed runs in Jacksonville 2 weeks ago, and I'd understand even Daniel Jones is faster than Trevor. But Trevor's a good athlete, and those were safe plays, Clay. Those weren't, I'm going to go get crushed. He had enough room to slide, but still pick up 6-7 yards. Like, it made you pay attention to it. He had, I think he even ran a bootleg on one of them. Why not use that a little bit more? And again, I'm talking sprinkle in, even if it's three times a game, just to maybe get him feeling himself a little bit in a flow, in a rhythm. We've seen that with guys. We called for Blake Bortles to run the read option every series, and they wouldn't do it. And every time he ran it, it seemed like it worked. Like, it was a good play run. And so I just think it helps these guys sometimes feel good and confident and get in a nice rhythm. And by the way, I think it's hard to defend.
You're right. That's what I noticed about Justin Fields when he started running the ball was it made him more confident in his throwing. He gets a couple nice runs, and next thing you know, you're confident, you're feeling good, you get a nice throw in there. If Trevor can do it, if he wants to do it, give him the opportunity. But these coaches and everybody's so scared about your quarterback getting hurt and getting injured. If he gets hit, you can't get him hit. But these guys know how to take hits, and they can slide, and you got to play the way they can play if you want them to realize their potential, their full potential. That's something that sets Trevor apart. You know, Tom Brady can't do that, so you're not going to even try it. So do it with Trevor to really realize his full potential. And you want him to be successful, you got to use all the tools in his toolbox.
All right, hang on tight. Big Raiders game coming up. What to expect from the Raiders? That could be interesting. Clay Harbor joins us, Brent and friends, on ESPN 690 with Aaron Schachter, Casey Kurtz as well. We're back right after this timeout.
I don't think it's a concern. I mean, for the player, I think, you know, you look at it as a possible fresh start, kind of rejuvenated, much like myself. You know, energy level will be high, new team, you know, coming back to Florida. All those things for the player are all positives, you know. From playing, you know, it's just a matter of once he is cleared by the league, getting him in here when we can and getting him caught up.
Doug Peterson on Calvin Ridley. It is kind of an interesting comparison, taking a year off, and Doug Peterson did the same, and so he said, hey, ready to go, man, fired up, let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's get back at it. The energy's there. And I thought that was an interesting way to make it relative to his situation. So we'll see about Calvin Ridley and what transpires when he gets reinstated. And again, I say when he gets reinstated, because unless something else is going on, or, you know, and then he does have an issue or something,
right,
then I would gotta believe he's getting reinstated. And the way he reacted to the trade, I think he even responded to a fan and said, I'm ready. I'm healthy. I'm good. Like, that was good to see.
Sure.
I think people were wondering about, from a mental standpoint, where he was at, and does he feel like he's going to get reinstated? And I think it looks like it's headed that way.
I always thought that was the beginning of an excuse before the story leaked that it was about gambling. But, you know, you don't want to say, you
it
know,
might
about
have been.
Anybody's.
Might have been. He might have known it was coming.
Status. Yeah.
That's possible.
And I guess you haven't heard anything about it. Not that you would, right? Not like he's going to check in with the fans and be like, guys, just so you know, therapist says everything is cool. That's not going to happen. But at the same time, it was just real suspicious to me that it all happened bunched up so close together.
Yeah, we don't know if it's same part of the story or if it's these two separate things.
But it was good to hear that.
The Jags definitely checked that out, too.
Yeah. They got to check out their investment. Yeah.
Absolutely. Brent Morton, Aaron Schachter, Casey Kurtz, Brent and friends on ESPN 690. That includes Clay Harbor joining us from Chicago each and every Wednesday in the 4 o'clock hour. And, hey, Clay, a good thing coming out of last week's game, with all due respect, James Robinson, who? Travis Etienne. Wow. I mean, I continue to say this. A star is born. A star was born from London to the rest of the NFL world, I think, on Sunday morning.
Yeah, the guy looks like the real deal. He just seems like he runs at a different speed than everyone else, and his vision is incredible. He's got such good vision. He can catch the ball. Now, going out there in camp and, you know, kind of get the scouting report, I'm so interested in ETN, and, you know, people are saying he likes to run outside, but he runs with power, too. He can do it all, and I think he is a bona fide star. He had almost 100 yards after contact, after the first hit. This guy is breaking tackles. He's making the most of each play. I am just ecstatic for him, you know, a guy that went through so much to be able to be in this position, to be a superstar in this league. And if it wasn't for a guy like Geno Smith or something like that, I think this is the comeback player in the NFL. And obviously he never played, but to come back from an injury as a rookie to now at the point where you're a top running back in the NFL is truly incredible. Happy for him. I know he's a hard worker. I think this is great for the Jags. Now he's got to get everything else figured out in offense.
That's a really good point. I didn't even think about it in that context. You know, kind of, would he be eligible for that, I guess? Comeback player of the year? Why not, right? I guess he missed it.
Do you have to play to win comeback player of the year?
Would he have had to play last year?
Yeah, I don't know the
rules. I don't think so. Yeah, I got to check in on that.
He was on the roster.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he probably qualified,
I guess. If a player can come back from, let's see, do they list the rules here?
But you're
selected by personnel. Right?
That would be an interesting one to kind of keep an eye on. Hey, one other thing about the Jags, or at least, you know, for now, they got to get more out of Christian Kirk, man, right? I mean, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, they spent, talking about $96 million in contracts on those two guys. Christian Kirk got off to a nice start, but outside of the Giants game when he had five catches, hasn't been a lot there. I mean, they have got to get him going if they're going to have success. And their offense is moving the ball, and they're doing it in other ways. But I just feel like they need more out of Kirk, just like they need more out of Trevor.
Yeah, Kirk's still top 20 in the league in receiving yards with 500 yards. You know, he's on pace for almost 1,000 yards here halfway through the season. Probably a little over 1,000 since, what, they played eight games, and now they're 17. So he's on pace for over 1,000-yard season for the first time ever. Got four touchdowns, so maybe 1,000 yards, eight touchdowns, but still, you wanted this guy to take the step forward with what you're paying him, and he's got to produce more. He's had a couple drops, he's been covered, and I think he's got the talent and the skill. He's still a young guy. He's only 25 years old, and I think he can still improve, but it's going to help him a lot once you get Ridley in the lineup, because you can take some attention off of him. But Zay Jones, I like what Zay Jones has done. He was catching a lot of passes last week. He's got great hands. He's NCAA all-time record holder for receptions. It's a stat I love.
Yeah, wild.
But, you know, I definitely want to see more from these guys. And you have an Evan Engram stepping up. So if they get going, I think it'll be great.
Some clarification on comeback player of the year. And I know, Casey, you're looking it up too. So if I defer from what you found, let me know. But it looks like ETM will be able to win the award. It's described as a player can come back from such adversity or play at a high level over the previous year, and this includes an injury or for playing well in comparison to a poor performance the previous year. So they count injury. The fact was he was on an NFL team last year despite being injured. He's playing this year. He's eligible to win.
Yeah, and I would expect he would be. I guess just double checking. Now back to the receivers for a bit. Kirk leads the team with 35 receptions. Evan Engram now is coming on. He's got 32. They did this backwards because they did it by yards. So Zay Jones has 34. So all three of those guys, Clay, in the 30s. I mean, they've shared the ball. Marvin Jones, 22. ETN has 17. You know, we had Dan Arnold last night on our Jags Report Live, and I continue to be amazed that he only has five catches in eight games. I feel like they would have been able to get these guys on the field more. We talked a lot about tight ends in camp and early on when you joined us on Wednesdays, Clay. But, I mean, is there some kind of package that they could get both of these guys on the field and utilize them?
You know, trust me, guys. I know how hard it is to get catches as a number two tight end in my career. If there's anyone that knows that it's me, you know, in 8 years, I have, you know, just over 100 catches. So it's tough. It's tough. You know, you get your packages, you get on the field. A lot of it's for blocking purposes. But if you're not the number one tight end, you're really way down the priority list, and you'll have a scheme thing here or there, and it's basically just to break tendencies because you're on the field for specific plays, mostly blocking plays, when you're spelling the number one tight end you want to catch the football. So it all depends on scheme. It all depends on what play you want to show. You want to put something on film. You've been running, you know, the play where the tight end kicks out the backside defensive end on a sift block. Now you got the sift to the flat on the play action. It's all about, you know, your little scheme there and what you're doing as a player. So I don't think there's really a way in this offense that Dan Arnold's going to get that much more involved if you're not the number one tight end. I mean, look throughout the NFL and show me a number two tight end outside of, like, historically, I know you saw, like, Gronk and Hernandez or Ertz and Goddard, but yeah. Those guys were on the field. Those are the starters. If you're not the starter, you're not going to get the numbers or the looks.
Well, and Manhurts, by the way, is the blocking tight end, so he's eating up that other tight end spot as well. That's a factor here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's like the old Mercedes Lewis, Julius Thomas, and I am Dan Arnold there. You know, you got the pass-catching guy. So it's tough from that position to really get a lot of looks, and you just got to focus on doing, you know, your little niche to the best of your ability, and hopefully he'll get an opportunity. And he's been making the most of it when he gets the ball thrown his way.
17.2 a catch.
I like that.
70, he leads the team in yards per catch.
Wow. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I had no idea. But that's good. He's going to keep doing that. Somebody's going to notice, and maybe you'll get more looks.
So between Kirk and Zay Jones and Evan Engram, all in the low to mid-30s on receptions at this point, they're all pacing to about 60 to 65 catches for the year.
Yeah.
And I think you said this yesterday. It's kind of what you brought Evan Engram in to do. But I think it's kind of rare that you see three targets on the same team at around 60 to 65 receptions. So usually you have a number one that jumps out at like 90 plus, and then maybe you have another guy getting some receptions in there, but three guys at 60 plus is not something that happens very commonly. But it, again, goes to show you the need for a true number one on that roster.
Well, I guess there's a need, or it's just you're spreading the ball around. I mean, I don't know if it's a negative
thing. You don't think it's for a reason, though?
I think right now we're looking at it as a negative way because they're 2-6. But if they were 5-3 right now, and these numbers are exactly the same, because, by the way, they could easily be 5-3 and these numbers would be exactly the same, Clay, I'm not sure we'd be looking at this as a negative. We'd be like, hey, look at Doug. Look how in Trevor. They're spreading the ball around. Like, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I look at teams that have had success in the past, and you've seen teams have success in the past spreading the ball around. I mean, you look as recent as the New England Patriots with Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola and, you know, all the guys that they have, the running back catching the ball. And a year here there, they'd have Randy Moss, but they never really had the one go-to guy. And obviously Gronk would have 1,000 yards here or there, but you always have Edelman with the around 1,000, Danny Amendola around there. So it's been shown before to be effective and you can be successful with that. So I don't think that's a problem, but then obviously you say that, yeah, you know, you have a go-to guy like Rob Gronkowski, so he could be the guy that you have to go to when the chips are down and you look at the Chiefs, who's spread it around with Tyreek and Kelce and, you know, some of these other guys.
But that's the thing. The Chiefs have Kelce. When you need to go and get a first down, you could throw to Travis Kelce, right? When Brady needed to go get a first down, if it wasn't Gronk on the Patriots, if it's on the Bucs, it's Mike Evans or Godwin. As a matter of fact, Brady had the most completions in the league last year. And so you had Godwin with 98 receptions. You had Mike Evans with
Mike
74.
Evans. But he split it around.
They're both number ones, though. But, like, Leonard Fournette is number three with 69. That's what I'm saying. Like, you really have a bunch of number two options right now. And I think it shows not just in the record, Brent, or in the yards per game, but the fact that we can't go get it when we need it, whether it's in the red zone or really anywhere in the late fourth quarter.
And I think what I'd like to see, I guess I wish if you could spread the numbers out a little bit that Kirk was a little higher than everybody else. You paid him the most money.
Yeah.
He looked like he was open all the time. I wanted him to get the ball more even when he got six catches to start the year. And he had a touchdown in each of those games. He does have four touchdowns, and he's not been bad. Evan Engram, I think, is right where you probably need him to be. Anytime we talk about a Doug Peterson offense, the best thing to do is go back to 2017 when they had that team and won the Super Bowl. And this is shaping up to be very much like that team. This is how Doug does it. Or he's just dealt the hand that he's dealt, and this is what you do. Now, the difference there is Zach Ertz was their leading guy in 17.
Mm-hmm.
He had 74 catches. But after that, it was Aguilar with 62, Alshon Jeffrey with 57, and then it really fell off, like Torrey Smith and 35 and Trey Burton 23. You know, and they ran, by the way, that was a 54-46 split pass to run that year. You gave us that trivia question months ago, Aaron.
Well,
so that was the year, and Doug doesn't like to run the ball. Well, guess what? The Jags are seventh in the National Football League right now running the football. So they are running the ball, and they're pacing actually much like the Philadelphia Eagles to spread the ball around. Now, their tight end isn't going to be their leading receiver, most likely, but Ingram still has that chance, I guess. I feel like he hasn't used the tight end as much as I thought, but when you look up and Ingram's got the third most catches on the team.
Close to the first.
That's pretty darn good.
I mean, he has a good game this weekend. He could be leading the team in receptions.
And you guys brought up, I'll just give you a quick little difference. I just pulled up any year recently for the Chiefs, and so I'm going 2018. They made it to the conference championship this year. This wasn't the year they won the Super Bowl. So they have Kelce at 103. Tyreek Hill at 87, and then it really dropped off. Like Sammy Watkins to 40, Chris Conley 32, Kareem Hunt 26.
You got to get two guys 200 receptions.
Well, so they were very top heavy. Like those are the different ways to do it. But they have two superstars in Kelce at the tight end position and Tyreek Hill, so they went top heavy. But the Philadelphia way is really what you have in Jacksonville. You have quality receivers without probably a superstar wide receiver. So I guess the moral of the story here, Clay, is I don't really blame Doug too much for the way he spread it around. Him and Trevor have gotten everybody involved.
Yeah, they don't have a go-to guy. That's 100%. You can't pay a guy to make him a go-to guy, and that's why I like these moves with these receivers. The market for a receiver, just look what they paid Tyreek Hill. Look what they're paying Devontae Adams. Look what you have to pay a number one receiver right now. It's incredible. The market for these receivers, I'm thinking about losing some weight and trying to come back as a wide receiver. You know, like, I don't know, man. These guys are getting paid. So you get a year with Ridley on his deal as he is now before he's a free agent. So that's good. You can have that next year to really get Trevor on the go without having to break the bank and find a number one receiver. It's tough. You have to pay guys this year. If you want to receive, so many teams need them. You're going to have to, and that's why the Bears had to give up a second-round pick to get Chase Claypool. I mean, these guys are going, I mean, there's not much out there in free agency either. You look at free agency, Doug's not dumb. Balky's not dumb. I mean, some people think he is, but he's not. And they look at free agency next year, and they see the best receiver on the market is Jacoby Meyer. I mean, there's not much out there, and the draft isn't necessarily strong at receiver. You had to make these moves.
Clay, one more thought on the Raiders coming into town here. Devontae Adams, I mean, he really hasn't been worth it for them. They can't win. No. They had 38 catches through 512 yards, five touchdowns. By the way, Christian Kirk numbers. They're paying Devontae $28 million a year. So, I mean, I know Devontae's really good, but this is a move to the point that we're all having. I mean, this has been not a productive move by the Raiders to go get Devontae Adams, at least so far in 2022. And one game he was suspended, of course, too.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame quarterback to Hall of Fame quarterback didn't really work out for him, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. But is that the mistake you're talking about? Or is Devontae still Devontae and he's got nine more games to show Brent that he's Devontae?
I think he's got the chance to show it. And obviously, it's the whole offense isn't doing well. They're 2-6. I mean, they got to start making a move now. They're desperate. If they lose, if you get to 2-7, I mean, you're toast. I mean, you're pretty much toast now unless you can just pull off an amazing run. But he's still putting up 1,000-yard numbers, but it's not what you expect from supposedly the best receiver in the league. That's what people are saying about him. He's the best receiver in the league, and right now he's
he had earned it.
Top 20. Yeah, he'd earned it, but you did have Aaron Rodgers throwing you the football.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm still curious to see how this ends up.
All right, let's take a break. We come back, we hand out the final rose. Good luck finding it. Well, I actually know where you're going with this. Oh. I mean, this shouldn't be that hard.
No, you think you do. You think it shouldn't be that hard.
All right, final rose with Clay Harbor, Brent and friends on ESPN 690 when we come back on ESPN 690. Hey, one last thing before we get to the final rose with Clay Harbor, Brent Morneau, Aaron Schachter, Casey Kurtz, Brent and friends at ESPN 690. You know, we're talking about like Devontae Adams. Derek Carr has struggled in that new offense. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. I brought up the other day, Lamar Jackson's of the world. Joe Burrow, we've seen some inconsistencies. Not that we haven't seen them great at times, but we haven't seen them great all the time. Justin Herbert, the same way. It's not the year of the offense is what I'm getting at. It's not the year of the quarterback. And I think we're seeing it with the 2021 class as well, Clay. I mean, does anybody know why this is happening? Like, our defense is just better? Have we figured out the schemes a little bit more? What's going on?
trying to figure that out myself. I'm not really sure. I mean,
it's like, let me look it up.
You still have some good individual performances. Like, you look at Tyreek Hill, who, might I add, is on my fantasy football team. My first draft pick.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, he almost has 1,000 yards right now.
Unstoppable.
He had 961 yards. This guy's crazy. People said they didn't know if he was – he's worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that's – I mean, you got to say he's actually been worth the money this
year. He's changed him.
I don't think he's ever been covered on any play. Like, he's open 24/7.
He's always open. The crazy thing is with 70 catches for 960, he's only got 2 touchdowns. But I don't know. Maybe it's tough going back to playing in the loud stadiums after the COVID year. Like, I don't know what's going on. I've been trying to figure it out myself. But I think that training camps, to me, have changed a lot. And it's like Tom Brady said, you don't get as many practices. You don't get to be as physical. You don't get as much time for the offense. You're not doing live periods. You're not doing 9-on-7 drill anymore, and it doesn't translate over to the game. Me as an old guy, I sound like a grandpa right now, but back in my day, we would do live periods in training camp and have no days off. But to me, I think you need that to be a successful offense, that it's harder to be a good offense than a good defense. I'm sorry to defensive players, but it is. You guys got to be all on the same page, and it takes more reps, and they didn't have those reps in training camp and preseason. So that's my spiel.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really put their finger on it. But there are still good performances. And, heck, the crazy thing about all this, I put it in the context of Trevor Lawrence and the rest of the class. Wilson, Fields has come on the last 2 weeks, but I'm a big – let Fields do it 3 weeks in a row, and we'll see if he's maybe over the hump, because Trevor couldn't get it to 3 weeks in a row.
Neither could Zach Wilson.
Like, if Trevor got it to 3 weeks in a row, I think there'd be this whole different feel. Like, I think that's like, boom, okay, we're taking off. But 2 weeks is like, okay, that's a nice little trend, but it's not really we're here. If Fields does it again, I might think, hey, you know what? Now you're on to something. But I've seen it here in Jacksonville with 2 weeks just isn't good enough. So the inconsistencies are there. That being said, the Jags are averaging a touchdown more a game on offense, and they've been disappointing a lot of times on offense. So they're more ahead of the curve in terms of where they have been last year under Doug Peterson. All right, hand out that final rose, will you?
I mean, it's pretty obvious who this one goes to, and obviously we've alluded to this a lot, but you know, those guys come on strong. We talked about them for possible comeback player of the year. But this final rose obviously has to go to our man, Travis Etienne. The guy's he's been special. He's tied for second in the league with yards per carry at 6.2. He's got 571 yards on the year, couple touchdowns. The guy's looking like a bona fide superstar. Travis Etienne Jr. will rose. He will. And everybody's happy except for the fans, because the Jags are 2-6.
Yes, they are.
Sorry.
Clay Harbor, well, we'll see what happens this week, man. The Eagles, the Jags, the Bears, we'll keep an eye on them. Thanks for jumping in. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
My pleasure, Brent.
All right. That is Clay Harbor each and every Wednesday. Talking a little less on the Eagles this time around. They're just good. There's nothing else to talk about.
How many different ways can we say it?
Well, we did say Tyreek Hill. Well, A.J. Brown has been that for Jalen Hurts.
Yep.
Right. And again, if you want the success stories, Jalen Hurts is a nice one. It was a little muddy last year. They go out and get a guy. Oh, the Jags just went out and got a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then year two of the system, Jalen Hurts. So maybe I shouldn't be talking about Stephon Diggs and comparing Josh Allen's numbers. Maybe it's Jalen Hurts we should be looking
at. Year two of the system, year three of the career.
Yeah.
So another parallel right there.
I'm going to start crunching some numbers.
All right, here
Brent
we go.
Sports Bureau goes to work. Football at 5 when we return at ESPN 690.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.